It's wrong. Only to some people. And apparently not you, since you're pretty good at it. She stiffened. Why would you think that? Because someone, a couple people actually, hinted at it. People? I tried to remember what Christian and I had said in the feeder room. We'd never mentioned her by name, though both of us had bragged about having seen someone use compulsion. And apparently, Jessie had noticed other things about her. Besides, it's actually kind of obvious. People love you. You've gotten out of so much trouble, and I finally figured out why. You've been working people over this whole time. I was watching you in class the other day when you convinced Mr. Hill to let Christian work with you on that project. He never would have let anyone else do that. I'd been with them in class that day. Lissa actually had used compulsion on her teacher to get help for Christian. She'd been so caught up in her pleas that she'd compelled Mr. Hill without even realizing it. Compared to other things I'd seen her do, it had actually been a pretty weak show of compulsion. No one had noticed. Well, almost no one. Look, Lissa said uneasily. I seriously have no idea what you're talking about. I need to go to bed. Jessie's face grew excited.
No, it's okay. We think it's cool. We want to help you. Or actually, we want you to help us. I can't believe I never noticed it before. You're really good at it, and we need you to show us. Plus, none of the other Mana chapters has a Dragomir. We'd be the first to have every royal family represented.
She sighed. If I could use compulsion, I'd make you guys go away. I told you, I'm not interested.
But we need you, exclaimed Ralph.
Jessie shot him a sharp look and then turned his smile back on Lissa. I had this weird feeling he might actually be trying to compel her, but it had absolutely no effect on her, or me, since I was watching through her eyes.
It's not just about you helping us. There are groups of Mana at every school, said Jessie.
He was leaning close and suddenly, he didn't look very friendly anymore.
Its members are all over the world. Be a part of it, and you'll have the connections to do whatever you want with your life. And if we can all learn to work compulsion, we can stop the Moroi government from doing stupid things. We can make sure the Queen and everyone else make the right decision. Everything about this is good for you.
I'm doing fine on my own. Thanks, she said, stepping back. And I'm not really sure you know what's best for the Moroi.
Fine? With your Strigoi boyfriend and slutty wannabe guardian? Exclaimed Ralph.
He spoke loudly enough to get Eddie's attention, and Eddie did not look happy.
Be quiet,
Jessie told him angrily. He turned to Lissa. He shouldn't have said that, but he's kind of right.
Your family's reputation is all on you, and the way you're going, no one's taking you seriously. The Queen's already trying to keep you in line and get you away from Ozera. You're going to crash and burn.
Lissa was growing angrier and angrier.
You have no idea what you're talking about. And, she frowned, what do you mean she's trying to get me away from Christian? She wants to
Ralph started to speak, but Jessie immediately cut him off.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, said Jessie. We know all sorts of things that could affect you and help you. You and Christian.
I had a feeling that Ralph had been about to mention the Queen's plans to marry Lissa off to Adrian. I was puzzling out how he would know about that until I recalled again that Ralph was related to the Vodas. Princess Voda was the Queen's advisor and best friend. She knew all of the Queen's plans and had probably told Ralph. His relationship to her must have been closer than I'd realized.
Tell me,
Lissa demanded. The thought of using compulsion on him actually crossed her mind, but she dismissed it. She wouldn't lower herself to that. What do you know about Christian?
No free information, said Jessie. Come to a meeting, and we'll tell you everything.
Whatever. I'm not interested in your elitist connections, and I don't know anything about compulsion. Despite her words, she was insanely curious about what he knew. She started to turn away, but Jessie grabbed her arm.
Damn it, you have to! Lissa's going to bed now, said Eddie. He'd shot over as soon as Jessie touched her. "Remove your hand, or I'll do it for you." Jessie glared at Eddie. Like most Maroy Dampier matchups, Jessie had height, and Eddie had muscle. Of course, Jessie had Ralph's bulk, too, but it wouldn't matter. Everyone there knew who would win if Eddie went up against them. The beauty of it was that Eddie probably wouldn't even get in trouble if he claimed he'd done it to save Lissa from harassment. Jessie and Ralph slowly backed off. "We need you," said Jessie. "You're the only one. Think about it." When they were gone, Eddie asked, "Are you okay?" "Yeah, thanks. God, that was so weird." They moved toward the stairs.
"What was it about?"
"They're obsessed with this royal society or something, and want me to join so they can have every royal family in it. They were kind of fanatic about it." Eddie knew about Spirit, but she wasn't comfortable reminding him what a badass she was with compulsion. He opened the door for her.
"Well, they can annoy you all they want, but they can't make you join something you don't want to."
"Yeah, I suppose." Part of her still wondered what they knew about Christian, or if it had been a bluff. "I just hope they don't get too annoying."
"Don't worry," he told her, his voice hard. "I'll make sure they don't."
I slipped back into my body and opened the door to my own dorm. Halfway up the stairs, I discovered I was smiling. I certainly didn't want Jessie and Ralph bothering Lissa, but if it came down to Eddie having to rough them up, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing them get a little payback for what they'd done to others. Chapter 22. Deirdre, the counselor, must not have had much of a life, because she scheduled our next appointment on a Sunday. I wasn't thrilled about it, seeing as it wasn't just my day off. It was also the day my friends had off. Orders were orders, however, so I grudgingly showed up. "You're wrong," I told her as soon as I sat down. We hadn't really addressed the questions from my first session yet. We'd spent our last couple of times talking about my mother and what I thought of the field experience.
"What about?"
she asked. She wore a sleeveless floral dress that seemed too cold for a day like today. It also bore an eerie resemblance to the nature photographs that hung around the office. "About the guy. I don't just like him because I can't have him. I like him because, well, because he's him. I've proven it to myself."
"Proven it how?"
"It's a long story," I said evasively. I didn't really want to get into the details of my Adrian compulsion experiment. You just have to trust me.
"What about the other thing we talked about?" she asked. "What about your feelings about Lissa?"
That idea was wrong, too.
"Did you prove it to yourself?"
"No, but it wasn't the kind of thing I could really test the same way."
"Then how can you be sure?"
she asked. "Because I am." That was the best answer she was going to get.
"How have things been with her recently?"
"Recently, how?"
"Have you spent a lot of time together? Kept up with what she's been doing?"
"Sure, kind of. I don't see her as much. She's doing the same thing as usual, though. Hanging out with Christian, acing every test. Oh, and she's practically got Lehi's website memorized."
"Lehi?"
I explained the Queen's offer to Deirdre. "She won't even be there until fall, but Liz is already looking at all her classes and trying to figure out what she wants to major in."
"What about you?"
"What about me?"
"What will you do while she attends classes?"
"I'll go with her. That's what usually happens if a Maroy has a guardian close to her age. They'll probably enroll me, too."
"You'll take the same classes she does?"
"Yep."
"Are there classes you'd rather take instead?"
"How do I know? She hasn't even picked the one she's going to take, so I don't know if I want to take them or not. But it doesn't matter. I have to go with her."
"And you don't have a problem with that?"
My temper was starting to prickle. This was exactly what I hadn't wanted to talk about. "No," I said tightly. I knew Deirdre wanted me to elaborate, but I refused to. We held each other's eyes for a few moments, almost like we were challenging the other to look away. Or maybe I was reading too much into it.
She glanced down at the mysterious notepad she always held and flipped through a couple of pages. I noticed that her nails were perfectly shaped and painted red. The polish on mine had started to chip.
"Would you rather not talk about Lyssa today?" she asked at last.
"We can talk about whatever you think is useful."
"What do you think is useful?"
Damn it, she was doing the question thing again. I wondered if one of the certificates on her wall gave her some sort of special qualification to do that. "I think it'd be useful if you stopped talking to me like I'm a Maroi. You act like I have choices, like I have the right to be upset about any of this or pick what classes I want to take. I mean, let's say I could choose them. What good would it do? What am I going to do with those classes? Go be a lawyer or marine biologist? There's no point in me having my own schedule. Everything's already decided for me."
"And you're okay with that?"
It could have been a question, but she said it like a statement of fact. I shrugged. "I'm okay with keeping her safe, and that's what you keep missing here. Every job has bad parts. Do I want to sit through her calculus classes? No. But I have to, because the other part is more important. Do you want to listen to angry teenagers try to block your efforts? No. But you have to, because the rest of your job is more important."
"Actually," she said unexpectedly, "that's my favorite part of the job."
I couldn't tell if she was joking or not, but I decided not to pursue it, particularly since she hadn't responded with a question. I sighed. I just hate everyone acting like I'm being forced to be a guardian.
"Who's everyone?"
"Well, you, and this guy I met at court, this dampier named Ambrose. He's a blood whore, a guy blood whore." Like that wasn't obvious. I waited to see if she'd react to the term, but she didn't. He made it sound like I was trapped in this life and all that, too. But I'm not. This is what I want. I'm good at this. I know how to fight, and I know how to defend others. Have you ever seen a Strigoi? She shook her head. "Well, I have. And when I say I want to spend my life protecting Maroi and killing Strigoi, I mean it. Strigoi are evil and need to be wiped out. I'm happy to do that. And if I get to be with my best friend in the process, that's even better."
"I understand that. But what happens if you want other things? Things you can't have by choosing this lifestyle?"
I crossed my arms. "Same answer as before. There are good and bad sides to everything. We just have to balance them as best we can. I mean, are you going to try to tell me that life isn't that way? That if I can't have everything perfect, then there's something wrong with me?"
"No, of course not," she said, tilting back in her chair.
"I want you to have a wonderful life. But I can't expect a perfect one. No one can. But what I think is interesting here is how you respond and cope when you have to reconcile these contradictory pieces of your life, when having one thing means you can't have another."
"Everyone goes through that. I felt like I was repeating myself."
"Yes, but not everyone sees ghosts as a result of it."
It took several heavy seconds for me to finally realize what she was getting at. "So wait, you're saying the reason I'm seeing Mason is because I secretly resent Lyssa for the things I can't have in my life? What happened to all the trauma I've been through? I thought that was the reason I'm seeing Mason."
"I think there are a lot of reasons you're seeing Mason," she said, "and that's what we're exploring."
"And yet," I said, "we never actually talk about Mason." Deirdre smiled serenely.
"Don't we?"
Our session ended. "Does she always answer your questions with questions?" I asked Lyssa later. I was walking with her through the quad, heading toward the Commons for dinner. Afterward, we were going to meet up with the others for a movie. It had been a while since she and I had hung out just by ourselves, and I realized now how much I'd missed it.
"We don't see the same counselor," she laughed. "It'd be a conflict of interest."
"Well, does yours do that, then?"
"Not that I've really noticed. I take it yours does?"
"Yeah.
It's actually pretty amazing to watch.
Who knew the day would come when we'd be comparing notes on therapy?" We both laughed at that. Several moments passed, and then she started to say something. She wanted to tell me about what had happened with Jesse and Ralph, not realizing I already knew. Before she could say anything, though, someone joined us. Dean Barnes.
Hey, Rose. A bunch of us are trying to figure out why you're on halftime.
Great. I'd known somebody would ask about that sooner or later, and honestly, I was kind of surprised it hadn't happened already. Everyone had been too busy with their own field experiences to give it much thought until now. I had an excuse ready. I've been sick. Dr. Olensky didn't want me going full-time.
Really?
He asked, staggering a little.
I thought they were always talking about how in the real world you didn't get sick days or something like that.
Well, this isn't the real world, and Dr. Olensky's word is final.
I heard it was because you're a threat to Christian.
No, believe me, that's not it. The scent of alcohol radiating off him gave me a convenient way to change the subject. Have you been drinking?
Yeah. Shane got some stuff and had a few of us up in his room. Hey.
Hey, what? I asked.
Don't look at me like that.
Like what?
Like you disapprove.
I'm not, I argued. Lissa giggled. You are, actually. Dean put on an offended face.
Hey, it's my day off, and even if it is Sunday, that doesn't mean I can't.
Something moved beside us. I didn't even hesitate. It was too fast, too covert to be anything friendly. And it was wearing all black. I threw myself between it and Lissa and lashed out at my attacker. In the flurry of activity, I vaguely recognized a guardian who generally taught the elementary novices. Her name was Jane or Joan or something like that. Jean, that was it. She was taller than me, but my fist made contact with her face anyway. She staggered back, and then I noticed another shape coming up beside her. Yuri. I leapt over so that she was between him and me. I kicked her in the stomach. She fell toward him, and both stumbled. In that brief moment, I had my practice stake out and aimed for her heart. I hit the mark, and she immediately stepped aside, since she was now technically dead. Yuri and I then faced off. Beyond me, I heard a muffled sound that I suspected was Dean fighting his own attacker or attackers. I didn't have time to check yet. I needed to dispatch Yuri, which was harder since he was stronger than Jean. He and I circled, both feinting and landing blows. Finally, he made his major move, but I was faster and wiggled out of his grip. I stayed out of his reach just long enough to stake him, too. As soon as he backed away in defeat, I turned toward Dean. Lissa stood off to the side, watching as Dean sparred with his attacker. It was pathetic, to say the least. I'd given Ryan a hard time, but his mistakes were nothing compared to this. Dean's practice stake was on the ground, and his moves were jerky and unsteady. I decided then that he was more of a liability if he stayed in the fight. I threw myself forward and shoved him out of the way, off toward Lissa. I think I might have pushed hard enough to make him fall, but I didn't care. I needed him out of the way. Facing my opponent, I saw Dimitri. It was unexpected. Some little voice in the back of my head said I couldn't fight Dimitri. The rest of me reminded that voice that I'd been doing it for the last 6 months. And besides, he wasn't Dimitri right now. He was my enemy. I sprang toward him with the stake, hoping to catch him by surprise. But Dimitri was hard to catch by surprise. And he was fast. Oh, so fast. It was like he knew what I was going to do before I did it. He halted my attack with a glancing blow to the side of the head. I knew it would hurt later, but my adrenaline was running too strong for me to pay attention to it now. Distantly, I realized some other people had come to watch us. Dimitri and I were celebrities in different ways around here, and our mentoring relationship added to the drama. This was primetime entertainment. My eyes were only on Dimitri, though. As we tested each other, attacking and blocking, I tried to remember everything he'd taught me. I also tried to remember everything I knew about him. I'd practiced with him for months. I knew him, knew his moves, just like he knew mine. I could anticipate him the same way. Once I started using that knowledge, the fight grew tricky. We were too well matched, both of us too fast. My heart thumped in my chest. and sweat coated my skin. Then Dimitri finally got through. He moved in for an attack, coming at me with the full force of his body. I blocked the worst of it, but he was so strong that I was the one who stumbled from the impact. He didn't waste the opportunity and dragged me to the ground, trying to pin me. Being trapped like that by a Strigoi would likely result in the neck being bitten or broken. I couldn't let that happen. So, although he held most of me to the ground, I managed to shove my elbow up and nail him in the face. He flinched, and that was all I needed. I rolled him over and held him down. He fought to push me off, and I pushed right back while also trying to maneuver my stake. He was so strong, though. I was certain I wouldn't be able to hold him. Then, just as I thought I'd lose my hold, I got a grip on the stake, and like that, the stake came down over his heart. It was done. Behind me, people were clapping, but all I noticed was Dimitri. Our gazes were locked. I was still straddling him, my hands pressed against his chest. Both of us were sweaty and breathing heavily. His eyes looked at me with pride, and a hell of a lot more. He was so close, and my whole body yearned for him, again thinking he was a piece of me I needed in order to be complete. The air between us seemed warm and heady, and I would have given anything in that moment to lie down with him and have his arms wrap around me. His expression showed me that he was thinking the same thing. The fight was finished, but remnants of the adrenaline and animal intensity remained. Then a hand reached down, and Jean helped me stand up. She and Yuri were beaming, as were the spectators who had wandered up. Even Lissa looked impressed. Dean, understandably, looked miserable. I hoped word of my stunning victory would spread around campus as fast as the recent bad stuff about me had. Probably not.
"Well done," said Yuri. "You took down all three of us. That was textbook perfect."
Dimitri was on his feet now, too. I looked pointedly at the other two guardians because I was pretty sure if I looked at him, my expression would give everything away. My breathing was still heavy.
I hope I didn't hurt any of you," I said.
This made all of them laugh.
"That's your job," said Jean. "Don't worry about us. We're tough."
She glanced at Dimitri.
"She got you pretty good with her elbow."
Dimitri rubbed his face near his eye, and I hoped I hadn't caused too much damage.
"The student surpasses the teacher," he joked. "Or stakes, rather."
Yuri was giving Dean a hard look.
"Alcohol isn't allowed on campus."
"It's Sunday," he exclaimed. "We aren't supposed to be on duty."
"There are no rules in the real world," said Jean in a very teacher-like way. "Consider this a pop quiz." "You passed it, Rose. Very nice job."
"Thanks. Wish I could say the same for my clothes."
I was wet and muddy.
"I'm going to have to go change, Liz. I'll meet you for dinner."
"Okay." Her face was alight. She was so proud of me. She could barely contain it. I could also sense her keeping something secret, and I wondered if there would be a congratulations surprise when I saw her later. I didn't probe too deeply, lest I ruin it.
"And you," said Yuri, tugging at Dean's sleeve, "are going to take a walk with us."
I met Dimitri's eyes. I wished he could have stuck around and talked. My adrenaline was running high, and I wanted to celebrate. I'd done it. Finally. After all the embarrassment over my fumbles and alleged incompetence, I'd finally proven what I could do. I wanted to start dancing. Dimitri had to go with the others, though, and only a slight nod of his head told me he wished it were otherwise. I sighed and watched them leave, and then I walked back to my dorm alone. Back in my room, I discovered the situation was worse than I thought. Once I'd stripped off my muddy clothes, I realized I was going to need a shower and a good scrubbing before I was presentable. By the time it was all done, nearly an hour had passed. I'd missed most of dinner. I ran back over to the commons, wondering why Lissa hadn't sent me any nagging thoughts. She had a tendency to do that when I was running late. Probably she decided I deserved a break after my triumph. Thinking about it again, a big grin crept over my face, one that dried up when I headed down the hallway that led to the cafeteria. A big group of people had gathered around something, and I recognized the international sign of a fight. Considering how Jesse's band liked to conduct their beatings in secret, I figured this probably had nothing to do with them. Squeezing through people, I pushed myself forward and peeked over some heads, curious as to who could have drawn such a crowd. It was Adrian, and Christian, and Eddie, but Eddie was clearly there in a referee role. He was standing between them, trying to keep them away from each other. Manners gone, I shoved aside the last few people in front of me and hurried to Eddie's side. "What the hell's going on?" I demanded. He looked relieved to see me. He might be able to fend off our instructors in combat, but this situation was clearly something he was confused about.
"No idea."
I looked at the two combatants. Fortunately, no one seemed to have hit anybody. Yet. It also looked as though Christian was the one on the offensive.
"How long did you think you could get away with it?"
he exclaimed. His eyes were like blue fire.
"Did you seriously think everyone would keep buying your act?"
Adrian looked laconic as usual, but I could see some anxiety under that lazy smile. He didn't want to be in this situation, and, like Eddie, he wasn't even sure how it had happened.
"Honestly," said Adrian in a weary voice, "I have no idea what you're talking about. Can we please just go sit down and discuss this reasonably?"
"Sure, of course you'd want that. You're afraid I might do this."
Christian held up his hand, and a ball of flame danced over his palm. Even under the fluorescent lights, it glowed bright orange with a deep blue core. There were gasps from the crowd. I'd long since gotten used to the idea of Maroi fighting with magic. Christian, in particular, for the most, it was still a taboo thing. Christian smirked.
"What have you got to fight back with? Plants?"
"If you're going to start fights for no reason, you should at least do it the old-fashioned way and throw a punch," said Adrian. His voice was light, but he was still uneasy. My guess was that he figured he could do better with hand-to-hand than spirit-to-fire.
"No," interrupted Eddie. "No one's going to set anyone on fire. No one's going to punch anybody. There's been some huge mistake."
"What is it?" I demanded. "What happened?"
"Your friend there thinks I'm planning to marry Lyssa and carry her off into the sunset," said Adrian.
He spoke to me, but his eyes never left Christian.
"Don't act like it's not true," growled Christian. "I know it is. It's been part of your plan, yours and the Queen's. She's been backing you the whole time, coming back here, the whole studying thing. It was a scam to get Lyssa away from me and tied to your family instead."
"Do you have any idea how paranoid you sound?" asked Adrian. "My great-aunt has to manage the entire Maroi government. Do you think she really cares about who's dating who in high school? Especially with the state of affairs lately. Look, I am sorry about all the time I've spent with her. We'll find her and figure this out. I really wasn't trying to get between you. There's no conspiracy going on here."
"Yes, there is," said Christian.
He glanced over at me with a scowl.
"Isn't there? Rose knows. Rose has known for a while about this. She even talked to the Queen about it."
"That's ridiculous," said Adrian, surprised enough that he too shot me a quick glance.
"Right?"
"Well," I began, realizing this was getting very ugly very quickly. "Yes and no."
"See?" asked Christian triumphantly.
The fire flew from his hand, but Eddie and I jumped into motion at the same time. People screamed. Eddie grabbed Christian, forcing the fire to fly high. Meanwhile, I grabbed Adrian and slammed him to the floor. It was a lucky division of labor. I didn't want to think what would have happened if Eddie and I had gone for the same person.
"Glad you care,"
muttered Adrian, wincing as he lifted his head from the floor. "Compel him," I murmured as I helped him up. "We need to sort this out without someone spontaneously combusting." Eddie was trying to restrain Christian from leaping forward. I grabbed a hold of one arm to help. Adrian didn't look thrilled about coming any closer, but he obeyed me nonetheless. Christian tried to jerk free but couldn't fight both Eddie and me. Uneasily, probably afraid of his hair catching on fire, Adrian leaned over Christian and made eye contact.
Christian, stop this. Let's talk.
Christian struggled a little against his restraints, but slowly his face went slack and his eyes started to glaze over.
Let's talk about this, repeated Adrian.
Okay, said Christian.
There was a collective sigh of disappointment from the crowd. Adrian had used his compulsion smoothly enough that no one suspected. It had looked as though Christian had simply seen reason. As the crowd dispersed, Eddie and I released Christian enough to lead him over to a far corner where we could talk in private. As soon as Adrian broke the gaze, Christian's face filled with fury, and he tried to leap at Adrian. Eddie and I were already holding on. He didn't move.
What did you just do?
Exclaimed Christian. Several people down the hall glanced back, no doubt hoping there'd be a fight after all. I shushed loudly in his ear. He flinched.
Ow!
Be quiet. Something's wrong here, and we need to figure it out before you do something stupid.
What's wrong?
Christian said, glaring at Adrian. Is that they're trying to break up Lissa and me, and you knew about it, Rose. Adrian glanced at me.
Did you really?
Yeah, long story. I turned back to Christian. Look, Adrian didn't have anything to do with this, not intentionally. It was Tatiana's idea, and she hasn't even actually done anything yet. It's just her long-term plan. Hers alone, not his.
Then how did you know about it?
Demanded Christian. Because she told me. She was afraid that I was moving in on Adrian.
Really? Did you defend our love?
Adrian asked.
Be quiet, I said.
What I want to know, Christian, is who told you?
Ralph, he said, looking uncertain for the first time. You should have known better than to listen to him, remarked Eddie, face darkening at the name.
Except, for once, Ralph was actually telling the truth. Aside from Adrian being in on it, Ralph's related to the Queen's best friend, I explained.
Wonderful, said Christian.
He seemed calm enough, so Eddie and I released him.
We've all been played.
I looked around, suddenly taken aback by something. Where's Lissa? Why didn't she stop all of this? Adrian raised an eyebrow at me.
You tell us. Where is she? She didn't come to dinner.
I can't... I frowned. I'd gotten so good at shielding myself when I needed to that long periods of time would go by without me feeling anything from her. This time, I sensed nothing, because there was nothing coming from her. I can't feel her. Three sets of eyes stared at me.
Is she asleep? Asked Eddie.
I can tell when she's asleep. This is something different. Slowly, I gained a sense of where she was. She'd been blocking me out on purpose, trying to hide from me, but I'd found her as I always did. There she is. She was... Oh, God! My scream rang down the hall, echoing Lissa's own screams as, far away, pain shot through her. Chapter 23 Others in the hall stopped and stared. I felt like I had just been hit in the face, only it hadn't been my face. It had been Lissa's. I shifted into her mind and became instantly aware of her surroundings and everything happening to her, like the next time rocks flew up from the ground and slammed into her cheeks. They were guided by a freshman I didn't know anything about, save that he was a Drozdov. The rocks hurt both of us, but I withheld my screaming, this time, and gritted my teeth as I shifted back to the hallway with my friends. Northwest side of campus, between that weird-shaped pond and the fence, I told them. With that, I broke away from them and headed out the door, running as hard as I could toward the part of campus where they were holding Lissa. I couldn't see all of the people gathered there, through her eyes, but I recognized a few. Jesse and Ralph were there. Brandon, Brett, the Drozdov guy, some others. The rocks were still hitting her, still cutting into her face. She didn't scream or cry, though.
She just kept telling them over and over to stop while two other guys held her between them. Jesse, meanwhile, kept telling her to make them stop. I only half listened to him through her mind. The reasons didn't matter, and I'd already figured it out. They were going to torture her until she agreed to join their group. They must have forced Brandon and the others in the same way. A suffocating feeling suddenly overwhelmed me, and I stumbled, unable to breathe as water smothered my face. Fighting hard, I separated myself from Lissa. That was happening to her, not me. Someone was torturing her with water now, using it to cut off her air. Whoever it was took their time, alternately filling her face with water, then pulling it back, then repeating. She gasped and sputtered, still asking them to stop when she could. Jesse continued watching with calculating eyes. Don't ask them. Make them. I tried running harder, but I could only go so much faster. They were at one of the farthest points of campus's boundaries. It was a lot of distance to cover, and with every agonizing step, I felt more of Lissa's pain and grew angrier and angrier. What kind of guardian could I ever be to her if I couldn't even keep her safe here on campus? And Air User went next, and suddenly, it was like she was being tortured by Victor's henchmen all over again. Air was alternately taken from her, leaving her gasping, and then slammed back into her, crushing her face. It was agony, and it brought back all the memories of her capture, all the terror and horror she'd been trying to forget. The Air User stopped, but it was too late. Something snapped inside of her. When Ralph stepped up next to use fire, I was so close that I actually saw it flare up in his hand. But he didn't see me. None of them had been paying attention to their surroundings, and there'd been too much noise from their own spectacle to hear me. I slammed into Ralph before the fire could leave his hand, pulling him to the ground and punching his face in one skilled maneuver. A few of the others, including Jesse, ran to help him and tried to pry me away. At least they tried until they realized who it was. Those who saw my face immediately backed off. Those who didn't quickly learned the hard way when I went after them. I'd taken out three fully trained guardians earlier today. A group of spoiled Royal Moroi took hardly any effort. It was ironic, too, and a sign of how unwilling some Moroi were to lift a hand in their defense. That while this group had been so eager to use magic to torture Lissa, none of them had actually thought to use it against me. Most of them scattered before I could even lay a hand on them, and I didn't care enough to go after them. I just wanted them away from Lissa. Admittedly, I gave Ralph a few extra punches even after he'd gone down, since I held him responsible for this whole mess. I finally left him alone, lying on the ground and groaning. As I straightened up and looked for Jesse, the other culprit here, I quickly found him. He was the only one left. I ran over to him and then skidded to a halt, confused. He was just standing there, staring into space, mouth hanging open. I looked at him, looked at where he was staring, and then looked back at him. Spiders, Lissa said. Her voice made me jump. She stood off to the side with wet hair, bruised and cut, but otherwise okay. In the moonlight, her pale features made her look almost as ghostly as Mason. Her eyes never left Jesse as she spoke. He thinks he's seeing spiders, and that they're crawling on him. What do you think? Should I have gone with snakes? I looked back at Jesse. The expression on his face sent chills down my spine. It was like he was locked in his own private nightmare. Scarier still was what I felt through the bond. Usually, when Lissa used magic, it felt golden and warm and wonderful. This time it was different. It was black and slimy and thick. I think you should stop, I said in the distance. I heard people running toward us. It's all over. It was an initiation ritual, she said. Well, kind of. They asked me to join a couple of days ago, and I refused. But they bugged me again today and kept saying they knew something important about Christian and Adrian. It started to get to me, so I finally told them I'd come to one of their sessions, but that I didn't know anything about compulsion. It was an act. I just wanted to know what they knew. She tilted her head, barely at all, but something must have happened to Jesse,
His eyes widened further, and he continued to silently scream. Even though I hadn't technically agreed yet, they put me through their initiation ritual. They wanted to know how much I could really do. It's a way to test how strong people are in compulsion. Torture them until they can't stand it, and then, in the heat of it all, people lash out and try to compel the attackers to stop. If the victim manages any sort of compulsion at all, that person's in the group. She regarded Jesse carefully. He seemed to be in his own world, and it was a very, very bad one.
I guess this makes me their president, huh?
Stop it, I said. The feel of this twisted magic was making me nauseous. She and Adrian had mentioned something like this before, the idea of making people see things that weren't there. They'd jokingly called it super compulsion, and it was horrible. This isn't how spirit is supposed to be used. This isn't you. It's wrong. She was breathing heavily, sweat breaking out along her brow.
I can't let go of it, she said.
You can, I said. I touched her arm. Give it to me. She briefly turned from Jesse and looked at me, astonished, before fixing her gaze back on him.
What? You can't use magic?
I focused hard on the bond, on her mind. I couldn't take the magic exactly, but I could take the darkness it brought on. It was what I had been doing for a while now, I realized. Every time I'd worried and wished she'd calm down and fight dark feelings, she had, because I was taking it all from her. I was absorbing it, just as Anna had done for St. Vladimir. It was what Adrian had seen when the darkness jumped from her aura to mine. And this abuse of spirit, using it to maliciously harm another and not for self-defense, was bringing the worst side effects of all in her. It was corrupting and wrong, and I couldn't let her have it. All thoughts of my own madness or rage were completely irrelevant at this moment. No, I agreed. I can't. But you can use me to let it go. Focus on me. Release it all. It's wrong. You don't want it. She stared at me again, eyes wide and desperate. Even without direct eye contact, she was still able to torture Jesse. I both saw and felt the fight she waged. He'd hurt her so much. She wanted him to pay. He had to. And yet, at the same time, she knew I was right. But it was hard. So hard for her to let it go. Suddenly, the burn of that black magic vanished from the bond, along with that sickening sensation. Something hit me like a blast of wind in the face. I staggered backward. I shuddered as a weird sensation twisted in my stomach. It was like sparks, like a coil of electricity burning within me. Then it too was gone. Jesse fell to his knees, free of the nightmare. Lissa sank with visible relief. She was still scared and hurt over what had happened, but she was no longer consumed with that terrible, destructive rage that had driven her to punish Jesse. That urge within her had disappeared. The only problem was, it was in me now. I turned on Jesse, and it was like nothing else existed in the universe except him. He had tried to ruin me in the past. He'd tortured Lissa and hurt so many others. It was unacceptable. I lunged for him. His eyes had only a moment to widen with terror before my fist connected with his face. His head jerked back, and blood spurted from his nose. I heard Lissa scream for me to stop, but I couldn't. He had to pay for what he'd done to her. I grabbed him by the shoulders and threw him hard against the ground. He was yelling now, too, begging for me to stop. He shut up when I hit him again. I felt Lissa's hands clawing at me, trying to pull me off, but she wasn't strong enough. I kept hitting him. There was no sign of the strategic, precise fighting I'd used earlier with him and his friends, or even against Dimitri. This was unfocused and primal. This was me being controlled by the madness I'd taken from Lissa. Then another set of hands ripped me away. These hands were stronger, Dampier hands, backed by muscles earned through years of training. It was Eddie. I struggled against his hold. We were closely matched, but he outweighed me.
Let me go, I yelled. To my complete and utter horror, Lyssa was now kneeling at Jesse's side, studying him with concern. It made no sense. How could she do that, after what he'd done? I saw compassion on her face. And a moment later, the burn of her healing magic lit our bond, and she took away some of the worst of his injuries.
No!
I screamed, straining against Eddie's hold.
You can't!
That was when the other guardians showed up, Dimitri and Celeste in the lead. Christian and Adrian were nowhere in sight. They probably couldn't have kept pace with the others. Organized chaos followed. Those from the society who remained were gathered up and herded off for questioning. Lyssa likewise was taken away, led off to get her injuries treated. A part of me that was buried in all the bloodthirsty emotion wanted to go after her, but something else had caught my attention. They were also removing Jesse for medical help. Eddie was still holding on to me, his grip never faltering despite my struggles and pleas. Most of the adults were too busy with the others to notice me, but they noticed when I started shouting again.
You can't let him go! You can't let him go!
Rose, calm down, said Alberta, her voice mild.
How could she not get what was going on?
It's over.
It's not over. Not until I get my hands around his throat and choke the life out of him.
Alberta and some of the others seemed to realize that something serious was happening now, but they didn't appear to think it had anything to do with Jesse. They were all giving me the Rose is crazy look I'd come to know so well in the recent days.
Get her out of here, said Alberta. Get her cleaned up and calmed down.
She didn't give any more instructions than that, but somehow it was understood that Dimitri would be the one to deal with me. He came over and took me from Eddie. In the brief change of captors, I tried to break away, but Dimitri was too fast and too strong. He grabbed my arm and started pulling me away from the scene.
We can make this easy or difficult, said Dimitri as we walked through the woods. There's no way I'm letting you go to Jesse. Besides, he's at the med clinic, so you'd never get near him. If you can accept that, I'll release you. If you bolt, you know I'll just restrain you again.
I weighed my options. The need to make Jesse suffer was still pounding in my blood, but Dimitri was right. For now.
Okay, I said.
He hesitated a moment, perhaps wondering if I was telling the truth, and then let go of my arm. When I didn't run off, I felt him relax, very, very slightly.
Alberta told you to clean me up, I said evenly.
So we're going to the med clinic? Dimitri scoffed.
Nice try. I'm not letting you near him. We'll get you first aid somewhere else.
He led me off at an angle from the attack location toward an area still at the edge of campus. I quickly realized where he was going. It was a cabin. Back when there had been more guardians on campus, some had actually stayed at these little outposts, providing regular protection for the school's boundaries. They'd long since been abandoned, but this one had been cleaned up when Christian's aunt had visited. She'd preferred hanging out here than in the school's guest housing where other Moroi regarded her as a potential Strigoi. He opened the door. It was dark inside, but I could see well enough to watch him find matches and light a kerosene lantern. It didn't provide a huge amount of light, but it was fine for our eyes. Glancing around, I saw that Tasha really had done a good job with the place. It was clean and almost cozy. The bed made up with a soft quilt and a couple of chairs pulled up to the fireplace. There was even some food, canned and packaged, in the kitchen off to the side of the room.
Sit down, said Dimitri, gesturing to the bed.
I did. And in about a minute, he had a fire going to warm the place up. Once it was in full blaze, he grabbed a first aid kit and a bottle of water from the counter and walked back over to the bed, dragging a chair so he could sit opposite me.
You have to let me go, I begged. Don't you see? Don't you see how Jesse has to pay? He tortured her. He did horrible things to her.
Dimitri wet some gauze and dabbed it to the side of my forehead. It stung. So I apparently had a cut there.
He'll be punished, believe me, and the others.
With what? I asked bitterly. Detention? This is as bad as Viktor Gashkov. Nobody does anything around here.
People commit crimes and get away with it. He needs to be hurt. They all need to.
Dimitri paused his cleaning, giving me a concerned look. Rose, I know you're upset, but you know we don't punish people like that. It's savage.
Yeah? What's wrong with that? I'd bet it'd stop them from doing it again.
I could barely sit there. Every part of my body trembled with fury.
They need to suffer for what they did, and I want to be the one to do it. I want to hurt them all. I want to kill them all.
I started to get up, suddenly feeling like I'd explode. His hands were on my shoulders in a flash, shoving me back down. The first aid was long forgotten. His expression was a mixture of both worry and fierceness as he held me down. I fought against him, and his fingers bit in tighter.
Rose, snap out of this.
He was yelling now, too.
You don't mean any of it. You've been stressed and under a lot of pressure. It's making a terrible event that much worse.
Stop it, I shouted back at him. You're doing it, just like you always do. You're always so reasonable, no matter how awful things are.
What happened to you wanting to kill Victor in prison, huh? Why was that okay, but not this?
Because that was an exaggeration. You know it was. But this is something different. There's something wrong with you right now.
There's something right with me.
I was sizing him up, hoping my words distracted him. If I was fast enough, maybe, just maybe, I could get past him.
I'm the only one who wants to do anything around here, and if that's wrong, I'm sorry. You keep wanting me to be some impossible good person, but I'm not. I'm not a saint like you.
Neither of us is a saint, he said dryly. Believe me, I don't.
I made my move, leaping out and shoving him away. It got him off me, but I didn't get far. I'd barely gotten 2 feet from the bed when he seized me again and pinned me down, this time using the full weight of his body to keep me immobilized. Somehow, I knew I should have realized it was an impossible escape plan, but I couldn't think straight.
Let me go! I yelled for the 100th time tonight, trying to free my hands.
No,
he said, voice hard and almost desperate.
Not until you break out of this. This isn't you.
There were hot tears in my eyes.
It is. Let me go.
It's not. It isn't you. It isn't you. There was agony in his voice.
You're wrong. It is.
My words suddenly dropped off. It isn't you. It was the same thing I'd said to Lissa when I watched, terrified as she used her magic to torture Jesse. I'd stood there, unable to believe what she was doing. She hadn't realized she'd lost control and was on the verge of becoming a monster. And now, looking into Dimitri's eyes, seeing his panic and love, I realized it was happening to me. I was the same as she'd been, so caught up, so blinded by irrational emotions that I didn't even recognize my own actions. It was like I was being controlled by something else. I tried to fight it off, to shake off the feelings burning through me. They were so strong. I couldn't do it. I couldn't let them go. They would take me over completely, just as they'd done to Anna and Ms. Karp.
Rose, said Dimitri.
It was only my name, but it was so powerful, filled with so much. Dimitri had such absolute faith in me. Faith in my own strength and goodness. And he had strength, too. A strength I could see he wasn't afraid to lend me if I needed it. Deirdre might have been onto something about me resenting Lissa, but she was completely off about Dimitri. What we had was love. We were like two halves of a whole, always ready to support the other. Neither of us was perfect, but that didn't matter. With him, I could defeat this rage that filled me. He believed I was stronger than it. And I was. Slowly I felt that darkness fade away. I stopped fighting him. My body trembled, but it was no longer with fury. It was fear. Dimitri immediately recognized the change and released his hold.
Oh, my God, I said, voice shaking.
His hand touched the side of my face,
fingers light on my cheek.
Rose, he breathed, are you okay?
I swallowed back more tears.
I think so. For now.
It's over, he said. He was still touching me, this time brushing the hair from my face.
It's over. Everything's all right.
I shook my head. No, it's not. You don't understand. It's true. Everything I was worried about Anna, about me taking away Spirit's craziness, it's happening, Dimitri. Lissa lost it out there with Jesse. She was out of control, but I stopped her because I sucked away her anger and put it into myself. And it's horrible. It's like I'm, I don't know, a puppet. I can't control myself.
You're strong, he said. It won't happen again.
No, I said. I could hear my voice cracking as I struggled to sit up. It will happen again. I'm going to be like Anna. I'm going to get worse and worse. This time, it was bloodlust and hate. I wanted to destroy them. I needed to destroy them. Next time? I don't know. Maybe it'll just be craziness like Miss Karp. Maybe I'm already crazy, and that's why I'm seeing Mason. Maybe it'll be depression like Lissa used to get. I'll keep falling and falling into that pit, and then I'll be like Anna and kill...
No, Dimitri interrupted gently. He moved his face toward mine, our foreheads nearly touching. It won't happen to you. You're too strong. You'll fight it, just like you did this time.
I only did because you were here. He wrapped his arms around me, and I buried my face in his chest. I can't do it by myself, I whispered.
You can, he said.
There was a tremulous note in his voice.
You're strong. You're so, so strong. It's why I love you.
I squeezed my eyes shut. You shouldn't. I'm going to become something terrible. I might already be something terrible. I thought back to past behaviors, the way I'd been snapping at everyone, the way I'd tried to scare Ryan and Camille. Dimitri pulled away so that he could look me in the eyes. He cupped my face in his hands.
You aren't. You won't, he said. I won't let you. No matter what, I won't let you.
Emotion filled my body again, but now it wasn't hate or rage or anything like that. It was warm and wonderful and made my heart ache in a good way. I wrapped my arms around his neck, and our lips met. The kiss was pure love, sweet and blissful, with no despair or darkness. Steadily, though, the intensity of our kissing increased. It was still filled with love, but became much more, something hungry and powerful. The electricity that had crackled between us when I'd fought and held him down earlier returned, wrapping around us now. It reminded me of the night we'd been under Victor's lust spell, both of us driven by inner forces we couldn't control. It was like we were starving or drowning, and only the other person could save us. I clung to him, one arm around his neck, while my other hand gripped his back so hard that my nails practically dug in. He laid me back down on the bed, his hands wrapped around my waist, and then one of them slid down the back of my thigh and pulled it up so that it nearly wrapped around him. At the same time, we both pulled back briefly, still oh so close. Everything in the world rested on that moment.
We can't, he told me.
I know, I agreed. Then his mouth was on mine again, and this time I knew there would be no turning back. There were no walls this time. Our bodies wrapped together as he tried to get my coat off, then his shirt, then my shirt. It really was a lot like when we'd fought out on the quad earlier, that same passion and heat. I think at the end of the day, the instincts that power fighting and sex aren't so different. They all come from an animal side of us. Yet, as more and more clothes came off, it went beyond just animal passion.
It was sweet and wonderful at the same time. When I looked into his eyes, I could see without a doubt that he loved me more than anyone else in the world, that I was his salvation, the same way that he was mine. I'd never expected my first time to be in a cabin in the woods, but I realized the place didn't